Today is Friday, November 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Dozens of countries vow to stop using coal at the climate summit, but even the host Britain faces opposition at home.
If we're going to have the green industrial revolution that we need in developing solar, wind, wave, and certainly here we'd love to develop more nuclear, it's all going to take significant amounts of steel.
The U.S. Supreme Court takes up a controversial abortion law in Texas.
Its unique structure, which relies solely on a private enforcement or really bounty system, has thus far allowed it to evade judicial review on the merits.
And U.S. Democrats say they're closer to passing the president's spending package. We'll have these stories and more next. The end of coal is in sight, according to Britain, the host of the COP26 climate summit, after dozens of countries pledged to stop using coal and end the financing of fossil fuels. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from the Glasgow summit, weaning economies off coal won't be easy, even for Britain itself.
Burning coal is the single biggest contributor to climate change. Over 40 countries made pledges Thursday at COP26 to phase out coal entirely by 2030 for rich countries and 2040 for poorer nations. Signatories include big coal consumers like Vietnam, Indonesia, Poland and Ukraine. They, alongside several global banks and financial institutions, also committed to ending all investment in new coal power generation. Alok Sharma is the COP26 president.
A commitment to end coal investment, to scale up clean power, to make a just transition and phase out coal in the 2030s in major economies and in the 2040s elsewhere.
But many of the world's biggest coal consumers, including China, the United States, Australia and India, did not sign the deal. Emissions of CO2, meanwhile, have almost rebounded to pre-pandemic levels. Corinne Lequeri is a climate change science professor at the University of East Anglia.
Behind this, we see a rapid rise in the emissions in China, particularly pushed by probably economic stimulus packages.
Separately, 25 countries, including the United States, also pledged to stop public financing for all overseas fossil fuel projects by the end of next year. But again, key Asian coal investors, China, Japan and South Korea, did not sign up. COP26 host Britain said the flurry of agreements shows the end of coal is in sight, but it still appears some way off. Britain itself is considering opening a new mine to produce coal for steel making. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has voiced opposition, but says it's a planning matter for local government. The local mayor, Mike Starkey, supports the mine.
If we're going to have the green industrial revolution that we need in developing solar, wind, wave, and certainly here we'd love to develop more nuclear, it's all going to take significant amounts of steel.
Britain is also considering the development of a new oil field off Scotland's Shetland Islands, not far from Glasgow, host city of the climate summit. Meanwhile, the International Energy Agency said Thursday that if all the commitments made at COP26 so far were fully implemented, global warming would be limited to below 2 degrees Celsius, a significant improvement on the 2.7 degrees Celsius rise the United Nations forecasted before the summit. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Glasgow, Scotland.
The U.S. House of Representatives resumed work Friday on the president's domestic spending package. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
After failing again to reach the finish line Thursday, House Democrats will be back at work at 8 a.m., hoping to finalize President Joe Biden's now $1.85 trillion domestic policy package. The Democrats want to vote on the president's signature proposal and the companion bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure bill that long ago passed the Senate. Though half the size of Biden's initial $3.5 trillion package, the domestic bill is still more far-reaching than any other in decades. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi appears to have decided to pass the most robust bill possible, leaving the Senate to make adjustments or strip portions its members can't agree to. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The new abortion law in the U.S. state of Texas has landed before the U.S. Supreme Court, which will weigh whether limitations on a woman's ability to terminate her pregnancy are legal. Lawmakers heard from experts on Thursday who urged the high court to strike it down. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The nation's highest court tackling the most contentious of issues this week, hearing oral arguments in the first of two cases challenging Texas Senate Bill 8, a recent Texas law restricting abortion as soon as a fetal heartbeat is detected, about 6 weeks into pregnancy.
But although the law is clearly unconstitutional, its unique structure, which relies solely on a private enforcement or really bounty system, has thus far allowed it to evade judicial review on the merits.
That unique element of the Texas law, essentially allowing private citizens a financial reward for informing on doctors who perform abortions, has drawn national condemnation from abortion rights supporters. They say it violates the 1973 landmark Roe v. Wade decision, making abortion a constitutional right.
Senate Bill 8, which bans abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, violates the central principle of Roe. The law constitutes a near total ban on abortion, banning abortion far before viability and before many people even know they are pregnant. Consequently, SB 8 is unconstitutional.
The law, which has been in effect for more than 2 months, received an accelerated hearing with the U.S. Supreme Court. But conservative legal analysts say the court's decision will not affect federal protection of the right to abortion.
They won't get to the question of whether or not abortion is constitutional or unconstitutional, but rather whether there needs to be a civil enforcement of a constitutional right. In other words, can we make sure that the way that the Mississippi or Texas state have written these bills is done the right way?
Abortion rights opponents say the law is an important step forward in protecting the human right to life.
There is nothing more alien to America's constitutional way of life than the toleration of abortion and its imposition on women who deserve better choices.
But abortion rights advocates say that the law has a disproportionate impact on people of color and lower wage workers, and that it forces women to travel to other states with fewer restrictions.
Abortion is a blessing. Abortion is an act of love. Abortion is freedom. I want to end by imploring this committee to help our communities right now. We need federal protection of abortion care.
Polling shows a majority of Americans support the Roe versus Wade decision, guaranteeing the constitutional right to an abortion. The U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear arguments in the second case challenging the Texas law next week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA News.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa. We'll take a look at coup d'etats on the continent. Are military power grabs making a comeback from Sudan and Chad, Guinea and Mali? We'll look at the causes and consequences of the latest series of takeovers and attempted coups in African countries. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
In South Africa, the party of Nelson Mandela has suffered its worst election result since the end of apartheid, winning less than 50% of the vote for the first time and raising the prospect it could one day find itself in opposition. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has that story.
South Africa's governing African National Congress has suffered its worst election results since taking power at the end of white minority rule 27 years ago. A final count on Thursday showed the ANC on 46% of the vote in municipal elections. That's seen as punishment from an electorate wearied by repeated corruption scandals and poor basic services. Local elections are seen as an opportunity for the populace to lodge protest votes. But the ANC has been steadily losing support. Winning less than 50% for the first time raises the prospect, albeit still remote, that the legacy party of Nelson Mandela could, in the not-too-distant future, be forced into opposition or a coalition with smaller parties. However, Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula pointed out that the ANC was still the victorious party.
That ANC from the voters are saying to us, we still trust you that you can do better and do things better, as you said, that you'll build better communities with us. But at the same time, we are not giving you a decisive victory.
And despite the ANC's falling popularity, rival parties have not yet been able to capitalize. Main rival, the Democratic Alliance, is still regarded as a party for South Africa's economically privileged white minority. It took 22% of the vote from Monday's poll. But DA leader John Steenhuisen said the political landscape is changing.
One-party domination is coming to a swift end across the length and breadth of South Africa, and we need to be able to take advantage of that going into the next election. So the road to 2024 starts today.
The Economic Freedom Fighters scored 10%. The fledgling Marxist party is prone to radical and sometimes violent rhetoric that does not appeal to a broad range of voters. EFF leader Julius Malema said the ANC falling below 50% made him the happiest man.
That was Reuters correspondent David Doyle reporting. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. Pfizer said on Friday that its experimental antiviral pill for COVID-19 cuts rates of hospitalization and death by nearly 90% as the drug maker joins efforts to bring an easy-to-use medication against the coronavirus to the U.S. market. Currently, all COVID-19 treatments used in the country require an IV or injection. Competitor Merck's COVID-19 pill is already under review at the Food and Drug Administration after showing strong initial results. On Thursday, Britain became the first country to authorize its use. Thousands of U.S. intelligence officers could soon face dismissal for failing to comply with the U.S. government's vaccine mandate, leading some Republican Party lawmakers to raise concerns about removing employees from agencies critical to national security. Several intelligence agencies reported at least 20% of their workforce unvaccinated as of late last month. That's according to one Republican in Congress. A charity ship carrying 800 migrants pleaded with Italy to assign it a safe haven on Friday as migrant attempts to cross the Mediterranean intensified and the Italian Interior Minister called on the EU for help. Among the survivors are children, pregnant women, and injured people, the German aid group CI tweeted. The vessel had already been carrying nearly 400 people pulled to safety at sea when it hurried to rescue another 400 people crowded onto a wooden boat on Thursday. Organizers say Ethiopia's Tigray forces are joining with other armed and opposition groups in an alliance against Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed to bring about a political transition after a year of devastating war. The signing in Washington on Friday includes the Tigray forces, which have been fighting Ethiopian and allied forces, as well as the Oromo Liberation Army, now fighting alongside the Tigray forces, and seven other groups. The alliance is forming as U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman is in Ethiopia's capital to meet with top government officials amid calls for an immediate ceasefire. Former U.S. military leader and Secretary of State Colin Powell will be remembered by family and friends at a funeral today at the Washington National Cathedral. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Powell rose from humble beginnings to become the first black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and later served as the first black Secretary of State. He'll be eulogized by Madeleine Albright, who preceded him as the nation's top diplomat, Richard Armitage, who was deputy secretary under Powell, and Powell's son, Michael. Powell died 2.5 weeks ago of complications of COVID-19 at the age of 84. He had been vaccinated against the coronavirus, but his family says his immune system had been compromised by multiple myeloma, a blood cancer for which he had been undergoing treatment. Mike Hemp in Washington.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. A group of scientists say they have detected water and carbon monoxide molecules in what is described as the most massive galaxy in the ancient universe. They say their discovery marks the most distant detection of H2O in a star-forming galaxy, and that the newly detected molecules also play an important role in the creation of life as we know it. The galaxy is actually comprised of a large and a smaller galaxy, which may merge in the future, and is located nearly 12.88 billion light years from Earth. This means the scientists were observing the galaxy as it was 12.88 billion years ago, just about 780 million years after the Big Bang. The researchers using the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array in Chile made their findings after conducting an ultra-high resolution and detailed study of the galaxy's molecular gas. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Dr. Abu Bakar Campo, UNICEF's Director of Health Programs, has been in Zimbabwe for a week to assess the progress of the country's maternal, newborn, and children's health systems, nearly 10 years after the UN agency injected millions of dollars into them. Columbus Mavunga reports from Mount Darwin, Zimbabwe.
Belinda Kaziwisi is from Mount Darwin, Zimbabwe, which is near the Mozambique border, about 200 kilometers north of Harare. She's one of the Zimbabwean mothers seeing the benefits that have grown from money provided by UNICEF. With her healthy baby in her hands, she says, "What I see has changed for the better is that from when I got pregnant until up to the delivery of my child, I did not pay anything," she says. "When I delivered, I was given soap, cotton, and other things for free. It was all nice compared to what used to happen before," says Kaziwisi. With funding from UNICEF, the Zimbabwean government has hired health workers who encourage pregnant mothers in rural villages to seek assistance from the country's health institutions to avoid complications. One of them is Leti Chindundundu. She says, "We encourage pregnant mothers to come to clinics. We tell them, when you get to the third month of your pregnancy, please go to the clinic. Health workers there will tell you what to do. The journey to deliver of your baby becomes easy. Even your baby will be taken care of in the tummy, since there are now so many diseases. If they do not come to clinic, the baby may be delivered with ailments. That's how we encourage them to come to clinic when they become pregnant," says Chindundundu. Dr. Chajudini Oyewale is the UNICEF representative in Zimbabwe. He says having health workers in rural villages and funding the country's health sector are both paying off.
"And when you look back at the latest result of the multiple indicator cluster survey, Zimbabwe has successfully halved maternal mortality ratio in the last 10 years. And this is a combination of different efforts of everyone. The challenges are real because the world is evolving. We didn't know that COVID was going to come. But what is great about what I've seen is innovation. The problem comes, our people innovate."
UNICEF's Campo was a junior official in Zimbabwe for the UN agency when it launched the Health Transition Fund, a multi-donor pooled fund to support the country's barely functioning health sector about a decade ago. This week, Campo has been in Zimbabwe to assess whether the fund has changed Zimbabwe's maternal, newborn, and child health systems. He says the funding is bearing fruits.
"And I'm very pleased with the progress which Zimbabwe has made in terms of providing health services to their entire populations. It is not perfect, but I think Zimbabwe can be proud of the achievement made. I think we have a fully functional health systems, in particular on primary health care. What I have seen is an integrated systems."
Kambwe Emali National said Zimbabwe now has a fully functional health system in primary health care, a sharp contrast to what the nation had nearly a decade ago. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mount Darwin, Zimbabwe.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam. A documentary about the impact of climate change in Africa is a highlight of the annual French Film Festival in Los Angeles this year. The festival, City of Light, City of Angels, draws filmmakers from Paris and fans from Los Angeles. Mike O'Sullivan reports on the documentary Marcher sur l'eau, released in English as Above Water, which is causing a buzz.
A Los Angeles gathering of French actors and filmmakers, along with Americans who love international film. Among the annual French Film Festival's offerings this year, a story of survival amid climate change in the Azawakh Valley in northwestern Niger.
And the children most specifically have to do 10 kilometers back and forth several times a day to go get water for the whole village.
Taking time away from schooling. Filmed over the course of a year, the French filmmakers returned to the village 5 times.
And we're supposed to go 6 times, but then COVID hit and everything was locked down, so we had to cancel this last visit.
The film marks the directorial debut of Aïssa Maïga, a French actress who was born in Senegal. She and the filmmakers worked with the nonprofit group Aman Iman, whose name means water is life in the region's language. Chronicling the struggle to have a well dug in the village. It's a story now playing out in many other communities.
It's really about the emotion of the people there, their life. And through emotion, we think we can actually access a change of awareness.
Along with raising that awareness, the filmmakers urge viewers to support the expansion of the network of village wells. The festival offers exposure and possible distribution deals for French films and television shows, which have a new audience because of streaming platforms.
Like Netflix and Amazon, of course, that they're able actually to create an audience for foreign programs. It's not only French film or European film, as you know, it's also Asian. And it's really a big change in the American culture.
As film becomes globalized, he says, it is increasingly addressing global problems. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
America's employers stepped up their hiring in October, adding a solid 531,000 jobs, the most since July, and a sign that the recovery from the pandemic recession may be overcoming a virus-induced slowdown. Friday's report from the U.S. Labor Department also shows that the unemployment rate fell to 4.6% last month, down from 4.8% in September. The economy's emergence from the pandemic, by most measures, remains on course. Services companies in such areas as retail, banks, and warehousing all reported a sharp jump in sales. Home buying was also up in the U.S., and consumer confidence rose in October. The attorneys general at 11 U.S. states have filed a lawsuit challenging a vaccine mandate for employers issued by President Joe Biden's administration. The suit, filed in the St. Louis-based 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, contends that authority to compel vaccinations rests with the states, not the federal government. The new mandate applies to private employers with at least 100 workers. Missouri's GOP attorney general says in a court filing, the mandate is unconstitutional, unlawful, and unwise. Voters in the rest of southeastern Nigerian state of Anambra go to the polls on Saturday amid a massive police deployment there in a key test of electoral credibility ahead of a presidential race less than 18 months away. More than 30,000 police have been deployed in Anambra, the heart of a region where an outlawed separatist movement has been blamed for a string of attacks on police and election offices. Analysts say turnout and the organization of the vote will determine public trust in Nigeria's Electoral Commission as the 2023 presidential ballot looms. One of the three frontrunners in Saturday's governorship race, who is the former central bank chief, has been a target for gunmen. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team and producer Nadia Taha, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.